It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this Tuesday, this Titanic Tuesday, and what a Titanic Tuesday it is. The 26th day of March, 2024. We are running downhill toward the end of March. There are, let's see, today and three more broadcasts for the month of March. And then, Sunday is Easter, Trans Day of Visibility, and my mother's, what would have been, 99th birthday, so... Also, my uncle's, oh goodness me, I guess it would have been his 97th birthday? 98? Probably 98th birthday. Wild, huh? But this is the Horn. Headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday. 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it is when you listen to the podcast, and thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If you'd be so kind as to like and subscribe, like every episode, make sure you're subscribed. Well, it'll theoretically at least help bring, I think it's more than theoretical, it'll bring more people to the community as they see it pop up on results on places like Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts and Podcast Republic and Odyssey and Spotify, etc., 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 etc. Just as an aside, as I mentioned, Annette and I have been watching Capote versus the Swans, and there is some just evil bitchiness in that miniseries, and it's not limited to Truman Capote, y'all. There was a remark about Yul Brynner that was absolutely scurrilous, but it wasn't. But at any rate. It's Titanic Tuesday, and every program here, well, if you pop by the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers, and that would be Irish Dave and Matt in San Francisco and Squeaky and Theo. Hey, gang, awfully nice to see you there. All capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, Bud Trimmer Emeritus, and Zimmergist Extraordinaire, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. There's so much to do this evening. Gracious sakes. But I don't want to get too far out ahead of myself. As they like to say on my filthy morning habit, I don't want to get out over my skis. I always thought when they used that get out over your skis thing, I always thought that was kind of elitist, because how many of us actually understand what happens when you do that? Nonetheless, thanks go out to our 26th day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you. So very kindly. Yeah, let me see here. Sorry. Running. Not running slow. Running goofy. Thank you to Ralphs so very much. And thank you to Emilio so much. Ralphs and Emilio are our solitary subscribers for this 26th day of the month. And thank you. If you'd like to be a subscriber, it's really easy and it's really super helpful. Just go to headon.live. The PayPal interface is right there on the main page. And you put in your $10, and that means you're setting aside, about a third of the price of a McDonald's hamburger without cheese. If I knew what crystals were going for, but I don't have a crystal around here, so I don't know. But anyway, or less than a half a stick of Wrigley's chewing gum per day per program, which is ridiculously inexpensive for a program of this quality and this caliber, frankly, thank you. New subscribers are always so very welcome. But at any rate, where we find ourselves on this fourth from final broadcast day of March, we are, and it was amazing how much progress we made yesterday. We are $390 away from meeting Cat in Ohio's Keep Robin's Head Above Water Challenge. If we raise $390, $390 more dollars, because we knocked out $610 of it yesterday, Kat will kick in $1,000 all by herself. She'll double the money that's come in and make it possible. Well, and that will leave us only $700 in the hole. So taken all together, we are $1,090 in the hole. But first and foremost, meeting Kat's challenge is primary. And I had a note from our pal Zed in Iowegia.
Zed, we got a bug.
Sorry, I love that line from the first Men in Black. Zed wrote to say, I know it's been a while since my last correspondence, but I see your women's basketball team is here in state. Yes, we are. And we are badass. I'm going to put a challenge out there for tomorrow of 5 times $22. Anything greater than $22, but one per person. I hope that makes sense. It does. For every person, up to five, for every person who kicks in $22 or more, Zed is going to double it. And so actually, if we get five people at $22, those five people will actually triple their money, because it will also go to Kat's Keep Robin's Head Above Water Challenge. And so, 220, that would knock out everything but $170 of Kat's challenge, which is profound. And Zed's been going through some stuff. Probate sucks, by the way. We're on the last step before we split proceeds, but it's been what seems like forever. I'm about 3 months behind on the program because I'm still running the adult daycare overnight stocking program at my store. I'm a bit of an audiophile, so I can't listen to some of your callers when they make a bunch of noise in the background. I'm so sorry to hear about Scott and Boss Man Wayne. Really enjoyed your conversations with Scott over the years. Let me know how many of the five challenges were fulfilled. Hopefully I can write back to Zed and say all five. Thank you, Zed. Thank you so very much. And, go Mountaineers. I tell you what, talk about home cooking. I saw the stats on the game against, what was it, Princeton? And the refs, I think WVU went 3 for 5 from the charity stripe. And I think Princeton was the opponent, and they had like, what, 30 trips to the free throw line? It was crazy. Thank you, Zed. And that's a profound opportunity you've offered. For someone with $25 more, Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito dust off a 150-year-old Comstock Act to target abortion rights. We'll be getting into that today, too. Oh, dear God. Ralph says, I'll offer a $25 challenge for these motherfuckers, Alito and Thomas. God, they're like Roger Taney. They're like Roger Taney. If Roger Taney and his clone had a baby, they'd be twins, and they'd be Fappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath. We'll get to it, I promise. So that's out there. We've got it. We've got a real fighting chance to end the month of March fully funded, and that's huge. So that would, let's see, I said 170. That'd get us down to 120 to go if Ralph's challenge is met. That would get us down to 120 to go on Kat's Keep Robin's Head Above Water, We Need to Keep the Girl on the Air challenge. I could not agree more, Kat, and thank you so very kindly. Thank you, Cynthia. Cynthia just jumped in and knocked out Ralph's challenge. So that's done. Now we've got 5 slots at 22 open. Vicky in Florida, Stan, just jumped in. That's one of the slots of that's one of the slots of 22. So that means there's 4 of those remaining. Thank you, Vicky, so very much. Thank you, Cynthia. Just jaw-dropping, Cynthia writes. Well, over the weekend, I bought some tomato plants, and since rain is coming tomorrow, I spent yesterday out in the yard preparing my garden box for them. It was so full of weeds that I needed to dig out, etc., that it took me almost 7 p.m. to finish. Needless to say, I missed Monday's show, and I'm streaming it now. Anyway, while I was out there, I decided to clean out my acorn Kamado after that rib smoke last week. I wasn't sure what I was going to find in terms of charcoal left after that smoke, but when I pulled the smoker stone out, it was like almost all that charcoal was still there. It is easy on charcoal, Cynthia. I love these units. And as long as you keep that ash pan and that little basically wire thingy that the ash pan disc slides into, keep it pristine, it'll be good for a while. But that's the first thing that fails, and then the ash pan goes. So clean that thing meticulously, make sure there's no ash or anything left on it, and then use a little canola oil or something along those lines, and oil it to form a barrier against any moisture, and save that charcoal. I don't think Cynthia says it was jaw-dropping. It's not that I put that much in, but I'm just blown away by how efficient it is in its use of charcoal. I don't think I'll need to add any for my next smoke. Otherwise, I'll look at my finances and see if I can do a show donation. I'm making lunch now, but I'm glad to hear that sous vide machine is working great for you. Oh, it so is. And I'm just mind blown, because the combination of what I can do with the smoker and the sous vide machine, just have a low, slow fire, throw some hickory on after I pull whatever I'm doing off the sous vide. And Cynthia has told me, just wait till you do a ribeye. So, like Mayella Yule, I'm going to save up nickels for a slap year till I can get me a ribeye to put in the sous vide. And I got to go to the post office box soon too, because I'm really anxious to see how much better it works with the vacuum sealer apparatus. Thank you, Lou, from the Philly Inquirer. Pennsylvania billionaire Jeffrey Yass's firm has a large holding in the company that merged with Trump's Truth Social. Trump, facing mountainous legal fees and fines stemming from legal cases against him, stands to net more than $3 billion from the sale. And the next question becomes one of how soon can he leverage the funds? Because I had read earlier that he couldn't touch it for like, what, 6 weeks or 6 months? I don't remember precisely. But now apparently he can with his board of directors, as long as they approve the early sale. The grift is never ending. And thank you to Christopher. Christopher says, go Lady Buffs, Colorado. Yay. I'll join in there. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher's just filled up another one of those $22 slots from Zed. So that means that there are three of those remaining. And if we meet those three, we will be down to $120 to go to finish Cat's Challenge. And then we'll have $700 after that just to finish March to the Good. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Christopher. That's so sweet. I had seen that. I hadn't gotten to it in the stack yet, but yes, the West Virginia legislature is truly, well, they've definitely got their finger on the pulse of what West Virginians want and need. They're back on their raw milk kick again. You know, you can die drinking that stuff, but hey, who cares, huh? And we now have a bill that lets people distill up to 5 gallons of moonshine as a celebration of Appalachian history and heritage. Mm-hmm. And after you've distilled your 5 gallons of moonshine, you can get in a fight with a neighbor over a pig and have a history-making feud that will cause the New York Times to come to Appalachia and write about the stupid, uneducated, drunken hillbillies. I mean, that is, after all, the way that the whole Hatfield and McCoys thing went. They're so cute at NPR. We've distilled some news for you about a piece of Appalachian heritage boiled up during West Virginia's latest legislative session. West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Randy Yowie reports on a bill that lawmakers approved allowing mountain staters to make their own moonshine at home. Okay. Thanks, Irish Dave, for this. But, you know, freedom. I mean, the freedom to distill liquor. God knows in West Virginia there's enough cars up on blocks in front and backyards to, pull old radiator coils out of. You know, remember, hillbillies, if it burns blue, you can drink it. If it burns green, maybe not. Definitely don't. I thought, well, it was going all the way back to the Carter administration, it was federally legal to make grain alcohol, which is basically moonshine, for use as a fuel. I mean, rocket fuel, but yeah. And you can make moonshine out of about anything. I used to go to a golf tournament where the host's father made his moonshine out of raisins. And it wasn't as vile as most moonshine. I knew another guy who made fantastic shine, and he always put one single mint leaf in the bottom of the pint bottle. And it took all the nasty out and just left it clean and refreshing and would take the top of your skull off. I don't do that anymore. Yeah, that's fascinating. And by the way, Ralphs points out, Marquette plays on Friday in the Sweet 16. Hang in there. Yeah. I guess, what, Marquette is the... Is Marquette the lowest-seeded team? No, that's... Or is that... Well, North Carolina State, I think, is an 11. Not sure where Marquette was seeded. I like to see the lower-seeded teams succeed.
Yeah.
Oh, well, doesn't everything just make sense, Lou? Yass is also a... Yass Queen. Yass is also a large shareholder in TikTok, hence Trump now advocating that the government keep its hands off of TikTok. Yeah, everything has a reason, doesn't it, Lou? And where Nitwit Nero is concerned, it's always going to be a grifty reason. So I presume, okay, let me set the scene here. I was up early. It was one of those nights where I fell asleep and started dreaming prodigious tremulous dreams. And about 4:15 this morning, I looked over at the clock and went, "God bless America, it's still early." Oh, damn it. And forced myself back to sleep until 6. But something about my internal clock knows that at 6 o'clock my filthy morning habit starts, so I had to be in Charleston today. It was a personal matter. A happily personal matter. I have a new friend. And they and I got together for lunch in Charleston because they had to be in Charleston, so I said I'd come down. It's about halfway for both of us, and we got together for the Indian buffet at a restaurant that's been open for, well, since the early 90s down in Charleston. Absolutely delicious. And they're absolutely just a delightful person to get to know. And we had a wonderful lunch. And I headed back for home. Poured the rain all the way. But that's why, you know, I was up early because, well, I have to get up early to get ready. No more just throwing on a pair of jeans and a t-shirt and the shoes and run out the door. Oh, that good ship has sailed and sunk. But the minute I turned on my filthy morning habit, I see this camera shot of a harbor in the darkness, and, you know, barely awake, I'm like, wait, what? Because the bridge across the harbor just collapses. Well, shit. And what that was the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Balmer. And I thought about all my friends, past and present, in Balmer. Our buddy Balmer Bob. I thought about, Natalie Wynn, who maintains one of the most popular YouTube channels, ContraPoints. Her new video, Twilight, is just amazing. And I thought about our good friend Reverbo, who is safely out in Colorado now. And just... Because the most horrifying part of watching that bridge come down was the fact that I saw headlights on the bridge. And then in order to keep traffic flowing, they like to do maintenance work in the middle of the night sometimes. And, you know, the construction crews and stuff like it because they get an hourly pay rate boost for working crazy hours. And there was a construction crew on that bridge when it came down. And it was shocking the way it came. I mean, it came down in seconds. And so I was still watching as dawn rose over Baltimore Harbor. And it was just horrifying. Equally horrifying because when you've done this as long as I've done this, you know, we're working on our third decade of of independent liberal progressive broadcasting now. And one of the things that horrified me was the fact that I realized that it wouldn't take long before the stupidity took hold. And there are moments when I hate being right. And of course, part and parcel of this was that we've neglected infrastructure through countless Republican presidents. The Democrats come along and start trying to work on things, and that gets sadly interrupted. And then the next Democratic president has to keep on working on it. Oh, by the way, as to moonshine, Flavio says, I think the stuff distilled from grape skins raisins is called grappa, and it'll take the top of your skull off, LOL. It is called grappa in some quarters. In other places, it's called raki. And it is indeed the skins and the pips left over after the wine pressing. And it is, to use the old Jeopardy term, a potent potable. I've had both. And I saw an episode of, I forget which Bourdain show it was, but he was drinking raki in, I think, Crete. And I think he said something like, this is the most prodigious hangover I've ever had in my life. Yeah. Almost every culture has some, every culture that discovered distilling has some version of it. You distill it and you don't necessarily age it or anything, and you just get busy with it and whoo! From the College of Obscure World War II Knowledge, Theo writes, raisins were the basis of a POW camp staple, raisin hooch, made from the contents of Red Cross parcels, raisin sugar, and a fermented raisin as a starter. Author Paul Brickhill, a POW in Stalag Luft III, described the stuff thus, it had phenomenal alcoholic ferocity, leaving a feeling of impending doom in the morning. The more learned chemists among the inmates worked out how to double distill the stuff into raw spirit, then added a few goodies to make it something less crude. If you couldn't remember very clearly what rye whiskey tasted like, again quoting Brickhill, it wasn't a bad substitute. Ah, human ingenuity. Thank you, Theo. So, anyway, like I said, after watching the horror of the bridge collapse, I knew it would be followed by manifest right-wing stupidity, and this being Titanic Tuesday, and the fact that the bridge collapsed into frigid waters, it is super Titanic Tuesday. And so, no, it didn't take long. Not long at all. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, Among famous bridge collapses in the United States was 1967's Silver Bridge collapse. I think 45 people died when that happened. And for those of you who are into cryptids, that was the origin of the Mothman legend. Myth. Myth? Myth? Yeah. And so I was sitting there thinking, the day will not be gone before someone swears they saw the Mothman on one end or the other of the bridge, because the Mothman portended the doom of the Silver Bridge in 1967. I'll add, because I mentioned it in passing, chatting early this morning with Chris in Germany, that I do not expect to see this day close. Well, no, that's the Mothman thing. But I told Chris, you know, maybe when we rebuild that bridge, let's do really something awesome and not blame it, name it, after a notorious, vicious, white supremacist, racist asshole, namely Francis Scott Key. Flavio noting the Francis Scott Key Bridge, it was like a piece of string, a freaking slinky, unbelievable, and it went down in seconds. And, of course, marginal trailer queen, for whom every Asian is Chinese, you know what happened. Oh, but let's be fair, Flavio, it wasn't just marginal trailer queen. Oh, no. Things could have been much worse. There was an emergency signal that went out. So, traffic on the bridge was stopped. There are still people missing. And we don't know everything yet about what happened. But it appeared that the container vessel, which was outbound from Baltimore Harbor, apparently loaded with a cargo of automobiles and light trucks, bound for Sri Lanka, steered right into one of the bridge abutments, and the bridge couldn't take it. You got to figure the kinetic energy behind a 1,000-foot-long container ship loaded with automobiles and various other containers. Packs a heck of a wallop, even if it's not doing much more than 5 or 10 or 11 knots. But anytime something like this happens, stupidity runs rampant. And so, consequently, we have this clip from Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Day had broken. They had a helicopter shot of the collapsed bridge. And the stupidity poured forth into the poor, poor ears of Emery and Marvelline sitting on their matching Barca loungers in their single wide at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club. This particular piece of stupid was uttered by none other than Maria Bartiromo. God, what a dum-dum.
There is. Let me also get your take on what's going on in terms of world affairs. The White House has issued a statement on this saying that there's no indication of a nefarious intent in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. The ship involved in the collapse of the bridge is 948 feet long, called the Dolly, a Singaporean flagged container. But of course, you've been talking a lot about the potential for wrongdoing or potential for foul play given the wide open border. That is why you have been so adamant. Why has the Republicans had such a hard time securing this border? The president says he's not going to take his executive action.
Good God, listening to her voice is like listening to a beaver eat a rusty saw blade. Gah! And that's coming from someone with a voice like mine. The interviewee is Rick Skeletor Scott of Florida. And the reason that the Biden administration had to put out a statement saying that this was not terrorism related, and it's not, it's a fuck up. It's a human fuck up. And those happen to human beings, sometimes with tragic consequences. But, well, that's what you get when you tune in to an entertainment channel that has news in its name and does little more, nothing more, than traffic in disinformation.
And you know that.
Well, we all have to stand together. We all have to say that it takes 60 votes to pass anything in the Senate, and so Republicans have to stand together and say, look, we're not going to do anything else unless we secure the border.
Because treating desperate migrants like shit will save the crumbling infrastructure that Republicans like Rick Scott have made sure continues to crumble from happening. In the darkness of the video, you can see the lights go blink off and then on, and then off and then back on. And the engine, the thing is, this is a late 1970s bridge. And the engineering of such bridges, especially long spans like that, that bridge was actually just slightly longer than the New River Gorge Bridge, which is a completely different design type. New River Gorge Bridge is a single arch bridge that's got concrete piers hundreds of feet into the mountains on either side of the gorge. They didn't realize it because so much of this state is undermined and we don't know necessarily where they are. When they were pouring the footers for the New River Gorge Bridge, they actually hit an old coal mine. And they had, and it became a crisis because they had to continue to pour concrete without stopping for like 30 continuous hours to fill up the coal mine with concrete so there wouldn't be any seams in it. But I think it opened in 1977, about the same time as the Francis Scott Key, named after a racist, bridge did. There are some analyses of what happened coming out. This, you know, and I admit, this may not be, given the scope of the day, this may not be the biggest news story. But Flavio points out the bridge, there was a model response. The Mayday went out and immediately traffic to the bridge was stopped. That saved countless lives. That's how emergency response is supposed to be in the 21st century. It was a model emergency response. Awesome. That's what competent governance looks like. I don't think you would have... It's not safe to say you would have that kind of competence in a blood-red maggot state. Because that kind of response requires constant training. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out, before the collision, the ship's crew notified authorities that the vessel had lost power. That Mayday allowed Maryland Transportation Authority police on the highway above to prevent many cars from driving onto the bridge just before the catastrophe. Governor Wes Moore said in a morning news conference, these people are heroes. They saved lives last night. And they did. It's kind of, well, the best of us. As to Rick Skeletor Scott, as Republicans, we have to say nothing else gets done until the border is closed. Well, dipshit, you had a border bill. You voted against it. Scott for brains. A blonde moment brought to you by, this from Dave and the Blind. If I recall correctly, Rick Skeletor Scott is one of the biggest grifters ever to rip off the United States federal government, and he became a senator. You are correct, sir. They do not say, however, the ship radio officials, when they knew the collision was about to happen, put in a Mayday, which they required to do. It's a miracle not more people were killed, but you're correct. It's a fuck-up. Why don't we just seal off everything in the United States, tuck our toes between our knees, shove our noses into our belly buttons, and breathe deeply until we all pass out? Oh, wait a minute. That's the Republican health care plan. Well done, Dave. Just bubble wrap the United States and make sure none of the evil brown people can get in. Even though the progeny of those brown people might turn out to be brilliant, I don't know, engineers. Well, that's not what they're here for. They're here to pick lettuce. God, I hate them. I do. It gets all over me. what? Wait, where'd my... Oh, well, we'll get there again. Stand by. But things like this early in the morning, they just sort of set the tone for a sense of weirdness throughout the day. Subject line, racist bridge. Matt in San Francisco says, I put my money on the smart Asian over the white racists every time. I know. I'm sorry. I was horrified when I heard about the road workers as well. I couldn't help but think. Some guy getting up at night, say bye to the family, go fill potholes to make some decent money, and wham! I hope they went fast and didn't suffer. I can't even imagine the horror of the bridge disappearing before your eyes and falling. Yeah, I know. And with a question, Kim in New York, is diminformance a word? As a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, I feel confident that it's not, Kim. Now, Spiro's Ghost put up over on that website formerly known as Twitter. Read the first few lines a couple of times. This man's brain and English skills are so utterly destroyed, I really don't know what to say anymore, besides that anyone this cognitively impaired, unhinged, and deranged should be in a memory care home, not running for president.
I'm not running to terminate the ACA as Crooked Joe Budin disinformates and misinformates all the time. I'm running to close the border, stop inflation, make our economy great, strengthen our military, and make the ACA, or Obamacare as it is known, much better, stronger, and far less expensive. In other words, make the ACA much, much, much better for far less money or cost to our grest American citizens who have been decimated by Biden, his record inflation, bad economy, Afghanistan catastrophe, and just about everything else. Crooked Joe Biden is by far the worst president in the history of the United States, MAGA 2024.
As George Carlin used to say, take him away. Check his calendar. He ain't all there. Disinformates and misinformates. We need a living, breathing version of the facepalm emoji that doesn't involve slapping your own self in the face. Disinformates and misinformates. Crazy old Grandpa MAGA. Well, we're going to keep citing the sage of South Carolina stand, Todd, because it's going to happen. Y'all, he ain't going to make it. And Spiro's Ghost is right. Anyone that's cognitively impaired, unhinged, and deranged should be in a memory care home, not running for president. And, you know, if all of his problems miraculously resolved tomorrow, hint, they're not. I still remain confident he's going to get rung up in criminal trials. I still remain confident that the $464 million plus interest is going to wind up in the coffers of the people of the state of New York. But if all of his problems were to disappear tomorrow, it wouldn't make a difference. Who was it? Was it Dr. Zarofsky that we were talking about out of University of British Columbia? The condition he probably has no cure. And it advances faster and faster and faster. It's like the snowflake that starts the avalanche. Doesn't look like much at the beginning. But God at the bottom of the mountain, it's hell on earth. Randy Radar said, I had just a few days ago looked up Interstate I-95, the loop around Baltimore, because my dad had once missed an exit while traveling to Western Maryland with my mom and had mistakenly ended up on Interstate 895, and I hadn't been finding that interstate route on a map previously, but now it was showing up, and tuned into the news this morning and found out that a cargo ship that apparently lost power collapsed the Francis Scott Key Bridge that I think is near Interstate 895, causing more than six people to go missing. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, Randy Radar, is Interstate 695. And traffic's going to be a mess up and down the East Coast with a huge traffic snarl in Baltimore, which is, you know, about middle of the way. Heaven only knows what the detour is going to look like. Randy adds, I have a fascination with interstate highways and their numbers in the same vein that people have a fascination with railroads and railroad engines. Yesterday, signals went down on the Metropolitan Philadelphia Transit System, main HQ, and were out for 24 hours or so, leading to my speculation that it was a broader cyber attack. Sometimes a cigar is only a cigar, as Freud noted. This was not a cyber attack. Things built by humans sometimes go sideways. And correlation is not causation. Oh my God, Brother Deacon. Yes, Cletus. Muhammad, the clinical psychologist, is here to steal your spot welding job. Hashtag seal the border. Oh, Brother Deacon. That's quality. Well, I knew it happened. I should have known better, but when I mentioned moonshine being made out of raisins, all I got was a text from Tracy, and all that text said in all caps was, fucking raisins! Honey, don't knock it till you've tried it. And once you've tried it, you won't knock anything because it'll knock you on your ass. Fucking raisins. Oh, what was that video that got Carol Baker so worked up and destroyed hilariously? The guy who sorted out the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Fucking flies! I need to catch up with Carol, see what she's up to, see if she's okay. But that's only one stupid thing that a maggot said about the bridge collapse. Because the attention queen, you thought I was talking about marginal trailer queen. No, I'm talking about Nancy Mace, who is desperately trying to hang on to her seat and may lose and is roundly despised by most of the rest of the maggot carcass in the House of Representatives because, well, she was a prime participant in the defenestration of Squeaker of the House, Craven McCarthy. Hi, Sylvie. Well, she couldn't seem to get booked by Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, so you'll take second best in that situation if you're Nancy Mace. And so she showed up over at Newsmuck, where this stupidity flowed forth. And it's good stuff, this stupidity. Darlene in Connecticut noting accidents. Professional accident deconstructionists will tell you that human error is always the cause. It's kind of the opposite of the line from Jimmy Buffett's one big hit, second big hit. Margaritaville. Some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but I know it's my own damn fault. Well, most people claim there's some dude to blame, And we know it's definitely their fault. Yeah. There's probably no small amount of human error here, all the way back from the design of the bridge to the... I mean, at least there's nothing to indicate that the captain of the dolly was trashed out of his mind like the captain of the Exxon Valdez. The fact that they had the presence of mind to issue a mayday call says that they were probably... Well, they were operating within accepted emergency norms. Nancy Mace, however, well, goodness gracious, Nancy Mace is an idiot.
I know that my constituents care about, and we'll be answering a lot of questions today and making sure that what are we doing to make sure this doesn't happen here?
Yeah, you'll hear that. I'm sure you'll hear the Democrats have a press release and conference somewhere today or tomorrow about the need for a $1 trillion infrastructure program. After all the other ones, and that's my question to you. It seems like we do have these infrastructure bills, lots of money in it. I mean, I've been under bridges. They're horrible to look at. You look and you see rust. If you drive over bridges, you see...
Okay, news muck talking head, why were you under the bridge? The only time I'm ever under the bridge is when I'm drinking screw top wine with the boys under the bridge. It's an experience. They have a rule there under the bridge. If we can't unscrew the top off the bottle, that's a wine we are not drinking. I've been under bridges. Do tell. You know, using his standard, again, it takes my mind over to the New River Gorge Bridge, because that's what I deal with most every day. It's probably, I imagine, when Matt in San Francisco heard about it, he immediately related it to, say, the Golden Gate Bridge or Oakland Bay Bridge. I've been over both. Makes me smile to think about it. Thanks, Tom, in sunny San Rafael. But if you were to see a photograph of the New River Gorge Bridge, you would think, and I'm sure this clown would think, dear God, how can that thing even stand up? Look at all that rust! When in point of fact, United States Steel, during its heyday of making steel, actually developed a kind of steel that by a process of external oxidation appears to be rusted, but what it is it is a coating that keeps working people from having to risk their lives dangling off the edge of the bridge 876 feet above the surface of the second oldest river on Earth, painting it and scraping it first. Because in the long run, that's not a good idea. Quite ingenious, really, but I'm sure that genius was, well, of course it's in West Virginia. It's all rusted up.
Things you are like, am I going to make it over this? The bridges are definitely old. The roads are old. But why, after all these bills, after all the money, do we still have really old bridges and really old roads?
Because,
well, let me take a run at this before Nancy Mensa Mace does. We still have a lot of old bridges and old roads because all too often one or both houses of the Congress are controlled by these creatures called Republicans. And Republicans don't ever like to put money into things that actually benefit the American people. Instead, they like to put money into tax cuts for fucking billionaires. Easy enough. We got that? Emilio noting, I know bridges. I know cans. Yeah. Emilio, disinformates and misinformates. Come on, Robin. You didn't expect Mrs. Informates to stay single and unmarried forever, did you? That's Ms. Informates to you, Emilio. But we haven't fixed everything because we don't have enough money to fix everything because the Republicans wasted a lot of our money on a handful of billionaires with a massive fucking tax cut back in, what was it, 2017? Remember that? I remember that. I know y'all remember that. I remember four long dipshit years of the Trump administration when every week was infrastructure week and nothing ever happened. If there is a little bit of good news out of all of this, it's this. When that section of overpass collapsed in Philadelphia a couple of years ago, every talking head in broadcast'em immediately said, well, this is traffic's going to be a nightmare going through Philadelphia for who knows how long because, well, it's going to be hard to fix. And the darn thing was open in a matter of a few months, not years. And it's doing its overpass job. And I remember how many people marveled at the time, you know? If this had happened under Trump, we'd still be wondering what happened to that bridge 2 years after he left office. Yeah, I would dare suggest that if we want to fix shit before it fails, we need a Congress that can provide the money to do it and a president with the will to do it. Matt in San Francisco notes, why do we still have old bridges and roads after all this money's been spent? Because we didn't elect Samantha from Bewitched, you dumbass. Fixing shit takes time. You don't just pass a bill and wiggle your nose. No, you don't. And the guy sitting at the bar doesn't watch her disappear and push his martini glass toward the bartender and get up and leave. A lot of drinking in that show. But back to Nancy Mace, Nancy Mensa, I was kind of proud of that one. Not like anybody wrote and said, give yourself a cowbell Roxanne or anything, but I was still proud. You know why we still have crumbling bridges and roads? Because green.
We're not spending it on roads and bridges.
Right.
Look at the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill that was done a couple of years ago that the left hails as this massive success, but it was mostly Green New Deal. Actually, in that bill, $110 billion went to surface transportation, which is roads and bridges, and of that $110 billion, $70 billion went to public transportation, leaving only $40 billion for traditional roads and bridges, what you and I think about. And if you live along the coast or you live near water, you know that our bridges...
Traditional family values, one man, one woman, roads and bridges. Oh, my aching back. I mean, you heard those... I'm not the only one that heard those words in there, am I? I feel confident that I'm not. Now, this is a video reference, and this is a radio program, so that's why I'm going to have to explain it to you. The ultimate irony of Nancy Mace saying that is that she's sitting there before a backdrop of the city of Charleston, South Carolina stand, the home of American sedition, and over her right shoulder is that massive bridge over Charleston Harbor. Here's a little secret. That bridge was not built by the hard-working peach farmers of upstate South Carolina, Stan. If South Carolina, Stan, had had its way, that bridge would have been built with enslaved people laboring for free. Not saying, just saying. Nancy Mensa really outdid herself. She's mad that money from the infrastructure bill went to public transportation. And you can hear the seething disdain in her voice, and you know what's going on in her brain. And you know what kind of people use public transportation, don't you? Yeah, not good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, homosexual, white people. Those people use public transportation. It's part of the Great Replacement Theory. You know, sometimes I think it was a terrible mistake when I stopped keeping the Jeroboam of Mexican gasoline and the swirly straw in here. Because she really brings it out in me.
Bridges are rusting out. You know that we have many, many bridges that have to be replaced and upgraded. And you know it's probably about $1 billion a bridge every time. And so I look at South Carolina when the infrastructure bill came through. We really only got $1 billion more than we otherwise would have over a five-year period.
Only $1 billion.
I can barely build a bridge in my district for $1 billion. That's just one district. So we have to be smarter. You look at the spending.
Wait, just a damn minute. Did she say, I can barely build a bridge? Nancy Mensa, you have never built a bridge in your life. Nancy Mensa, if you set out to build a bridge, I wouldn't let a piss ant try to cross on it for fear of it collapsing. Fucking genius. Now, as to public transportation users, Lee in New York says, me? Well, you live in New York, Lee. Gracious sakes alive, that New York City. You know, she comes from Charleston, South Carolina, Stan, where the general area serves as the setting for a book called The Prince of Tides, wherein the speaker, the protagonist, says that Southerners raise hating New York to the level of an art. To be a Southerner is to try to out-hate New York among your other Southerners. You ever notice that the places that the Southerners hate the most are the places that actually function better? And by the way, all those roads, let's remember, South Carolina, Stan, is a broke-ass welfare state. They couldn't pave a mile of road without tax dollars from California and Washington and Oregon and New York and Pennsylvania, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois. The ultimate welfare queens, the Confederacy. Nancy Mace, bridge builder. I hate the fact that I have a terrible old joke running through my mind right now. I'm debating whether to recount it. Lee says, bridge builder? I bet Nancy Mace tore a few down. Oh, I think I know what you mean, and I'm pretty sure she did too. There's always a good time for a Latin and ancient Rome reference. The Latin verb facio facere feci factum means to make or to build. The Latin noun pons pontis means bridge. It's an ancient echo of the importance of being able to get from one side of the Tiber to the other, that the chief priest of the ancient Roman religion was called the Pontifex Maximus, the greatest bridge builder. I guess on the theory that the Pontifex Maximus was establishing a bridge, a connection between between heaven and earth, between the gods and humanity. Now we've got our obligatory Rome reference taken care of. Darlene in Connecticut says she has the perfect last name, Mace, a fucking repellent. Does this stupid woman have any idea what the hell she is talking about? Oh, wait, this is her daily personal promo fix. Thus, the answer is no. So there was this... Ralph says, go for it, Robin. The rest of the Horn Family Community's congregation is going to be so angry at you. So there's this guy, Phil. And Phil was getting his fill at the pub one evening. I wonder how many people already know where this is going. And he says, you know, I'm an architect and an engineer. Now, I've built some of the greatest bridges the world has ever known. I've built bridges that spanned between islands in the Pacific. I've designed and built bridges that cross from one mountain range to another. I've built bridges that connect continents. Do they call me Phil the bridge builder? No. But suck one cock. I'll see myself out. That was not going to... I couldn't. That was not going to just rattle around in my... I would have had to tell that to somebody. Once it entered the stream of my consciousness. Because, again, there's no Jeroboam of Mexican gasoline and no swirly straw. Don't you hate yourself now, Ralphs? Oh, I'm... Okay, let me deal with this right now. Ron and Raleigh asked me yesterday. He kindly sent me the... as did Micah, the trailer for the film Civil War. Yeah, Ralphs, I told you. What? I watched the trailer. You and Micah sent it to me. And I got maybe 20 seconds into it, and it wasn't like the trailer for Dune 2. Where you're just like, you got your hands on the arms of your chair and you're leaning into the screen to make sure you miss nothing. Y'all know. No. Civil War posits the Western Alliance attacking the United States of America in a civil war. And you know off the bat that this is some completely cockamamie horseshit because, wait for it, the Californians are going to be, what? The Western Alliance is an insurrectionist alliance between Texas and California against the rest of the country. And it's a, you know, it's a maggots... It's a maggot's wet dream. Because we're going to take the country back. In short, Ron, that just looked so dumb. It looked like a macro idea of the Purge movies. Just so monumentally dumb. Oh, wow. Matt in San Francisco writing. Roxanne. I didn't see that coming, so to speak. I love a good cocksucker joke. Do they call me Phil the Bridge Builder? Well, at least we're done. At least we're done with Nancy Mensa. But that doesn't mean we're done with the stupidity. Ah, Lee in New York. Thank you. The Keebler Orcs will be glad. Lou, tell the Keebler Orcs the obligatory Star Trek reference has been fulfilled. Obligatory Star Trek insult. Nancy Mace is not qualified to be a yeoman on the Enterprise Bridge. Oh. Well done. Now we've got the orcs off my back. Well, thank you, Billable Rick. I can always count on you. Robin, give yourself a cowbell for renaming the maced lady Nancy Mensa. I will. You've restored my faith, Billable. So we're done with some dumb, but we're not done with the dumbest of the dumb. Oh, no. No, no. With the collapse of the bridge, every maggot. I wonder sometimes how much brown acid made it out of Woodstock in 1969. Because it appears that there is a lot of there must have just been a shit ton of it. And I think Alex Jones has his own particularly huge stash. So the minute Alex Jones heard about the Francis Scott Key Bridge going down, he wrote, "Looks deliberate to me. A cyber attack is probable. World War III has already started." Can someone put Alex Jones in the same memory care home as Nitwit Nero? And here's if there's a worst part of this, here it is. Alex Jones was actually riffing off a comment made by accused racist and sex trafficker Andrew Tate, who had previously said, nothing is safe. Black Swan event imminent. You know, because he's an American citizen, but he was raised in the UK. Because there is something fundamentally wrong with the ability of vast swaths of the American people, and apparently people in the UK, to understand something for just being what it is. I know it seems nutty, but sometimes things just happen. Sometimes bridges collapse, and there's nothing nefarious, and there's no Muslims, no Israelis behind it. And thank God Joe Biden is in office. Otherwise, we'd be, I don't know, attacking North Korea or Iran. We've seen this script before. September 12th, 2001. Go out there and get me some evidence that Saddam did this. Sir, there's no evidence Saddam did it. Well, go back and look again. He tried to kill my daddy. We're going to fuck him up. And so it was that, you know, Alex, World War III has already begun. Well, sign up, motherfucker! Somebody toss him an M1 Garand and send him to the front. This may, like I said, this may be the Titanicus Titanic Tuesday of all Titanic Tuesdays. And I'm almost afraid to ask what the is a black swan event. That's black swan event imminent. I'm sorry, when I read anything from Andrew Tate, I just hear the voice of the narrator from Gunga Din. You might talk a gin and beer when you quoted Saif out here and you sent to penny fights and all this shit. When it comes to war, you'll deal with it on slaughter and you lick the blooming boots of him and he's got it. That's enough of that, Roxanne. So the paranoids came out in force. And Matt Gaetz from Media Matters said, well, of course, there are blue-checked accounts farming engagement by blaming the Jews. The Jews! For the Baltimore Bridge collapse. This was not an accident. Israel cancels its visit to Washington after the U.S. allows the UN Gaza ceasefire resolution to pass, and then the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore is attacked. This is not a coincidence, nor was it an accident. Pure coincidence? That's one of those little tells that it wasn't written by someone who's a native user of the English language. Pure coincidence? There's a hyphen in there. You can guess where. The U.S. allows the United Nations ceasefire resolution. Israel cancels Washington visit after U.S. allows UN Gaza ceasefire resolution. Dolly collides with the Baltimore Bridge. At one and the same time, they seem to think that the evil doers the world over are evil masterminds, but at the same time are so damn dumb that the only way they can get... really? A container ship full of Hyundais? That's it? Yeah, the Andrew Tate excrement on X was a ship was cyber attacked. Lights go off and it deliberately steers toward the bridge supports. Foreign agents of the USA attack digital infrastructures. Can you imagine how pathetic it is? How pitiable it is? For someone to live like that? One wise ass said, irresponsible use of the Jewish space lasers, if you ask me. Okay, that was a quality response. See, that's what those were, the blinking lights on the dolly. Those were actually signals to the Jewish space lasers. Yeah. It is literally stultifying. I feel dumber having shared this information. And there's so much dumb. Oh, and so much infuriation, too. I think that is a word. It is now. It's not the same as disinformates. Dateline Houston. Prosecutors today said they would drop the securities fraud charges facing Attorney General Ken Paxton if he performs community service and fulfills other conditions of a pretrial agreement, bringing an abrupt end to the nearly nine-year-old felony case that has loomed over the embattled Republican since his early days in office. Son of a... Mother... God bless... Flagstag, not pull, Frazzleack, and blue nose... Community service? What kind of community could be adequately served by a dirtbag like Ken Paxton? He was due to go to trial 3 weeks from now. But now he will not have to face felony charges for securities fraud as long as he takes advanced legal education courses and pays restitution to those he is accused of defrauding more than a decade ago when he allegedly solicited investors in a McKinney technology company without disclosing that the firm was paying him to promote its stock. Prosecutor Brian Weiss said what he'll have to pay is somewhere a little bit south of $300,000. A little bit south being defined as $3.16. And he doesn't even have to enter a plea. This sweetheart deal is the difference between him spending decades behind bars where he fucking belongs and being branded a felon for the rest of his natural born days, which would have kept him from running for office. Now he'll probably run for governor. And what's worse, according to Paxton's pettifogger, one Dan Cogdell, said, well, the prosecutors came to us and we were happy to agree to the terms of the dismissal. Well, I'll bet you were. But let me be clear. At no time was he going to enter any plea bargain agreement or admit to conduct that simply did not occur. There's no admission of any wrongdoing on Ken's part, because he's Ken now, in the agreement, because there's no wrongdoing on his part. And Texas is apparently so fucked up that the reason it's gone on for 9 years, because we've asked this question repeatedly, how come it takes 9 years to bring a wealthy white attorney general of Texas to trial when you can stick somebody in Huntsville, Texas over the course of a couple of days? Well, the delays were brought on by an argument over where to try the case and how much the special prosecutor should be paid. And the allegations basically were that he conned some customers into dropping money into a tech startup called Servergy without telling them that he would make a bundle off of whatever they paid in. In one case, he talked a former Republican legislator from Texas into dropping $100,000 worth of $100,000 into that startup. And so the prosecutor's office just, well, on second and long, they got into their emergency punt formation and kicked the case away. And that's right up there with a, and I'm sure our dear friend Jessica up in the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere can verify this. Minnesota may be a blue state, but that doesn't mean that it's devoid of maggot dumbassery. Enter Republican Minnesota State Senator Warren Limmer. Who entered his objection, and I want to make sure that I get this right because it's so unutterably stupid. Do you remember years ago when Jason Isbell on social media took on a dude who said that he needed a semi-automatic assault rifle because he couldn't let his children out to play without having the rifle out because of the hordes of 35 to 50 feral hogs who might attack them? And Jason Isbell, being quite the wit, just burned him to the ground. Well, Republican maggot Minnesota State Senator Warren Limmer is opposing a bill in the Minnesota legislature that would have enshrined statewide standards for how to safely store firearms. You might recall the recently decided cases of the Crumbleys, not too far away in Michigan, who just sort of randomly left firearms laying around until their son, Ethan, having experienced profound behavioral health distress and receiving no help, took the gun to school one day and started wasting his classmates and maiming them. So maybe having a law about how people store their firearms would be a good idea. Because after all, the Second Sacred Amendment allows people to keep and bear arms. Well, in that word keep, I guess now, under the maggot interpretation, means leave them laying around anywhere and anywhere you want. Because State Senator Warren Limmer said that he couldn't countenance a safe storage bill because, and this is a quote, y'all, get the hockey puck. There's another segment of our population that often requires guns in their occupation. I'm talking about rural farm people that are living out in rural areas. You know, that's generally where your rural farm people live, is in your rural areas. I'm not an expert in Minnesota rurality, but I feel pretty well certain that your rural Minnesotans do, in fact, live in rural areas. I have a feeling rural in this case is doing a lot of heavy lifting for the word white. I'm talking about rural farm people that are living out in rural areas. They not only have to have concerns about predation, because there are animals in the land of a thousand lakes. There are animals that hunt and stalk and prey upon rural farm people. So you have a predation problem. Maybe chupacabras? Mothman driven half mad by chemtrails? No, entirely mad. Yeah, I'm talking about rural farm people that are living out in rural areas. They not only have to have concerns about predation, but they also have concerns about their own domestic farm animal, because domestic farm animal violence is a thing in Minnesota. We don't talk about it a lot, but every now and then when we get wasted on a big old pan of hot dish, well, you know, the hair comes down and you start talking about your rural problems and your concerns about your domestic farm animals. You know, when there's so much serious stuff in the world, I'm actually grateful for stories like this. I am. Because he explained what he meant about the menaces faced by your rural farm people in your rural farm areas by their own domestic farm animals. Farm animals can at times be very dangerous. Take, for example, a cow who had just recently had a calf. And I swear to God, in my mind, when I first read this story, I could hear the maggot contingent in the Minnesota State Senate saying, "Harumph! Harumph! Gabby Johnson is right." Yeah, take, for example, a cow who had just recently had a calf. You even walk too close to a cow, and it'll take you down and trample you into dust. And many farmers have a readily available gun just for those emergencies. Fumbling around with a lock while a cow or a bull or any other animal is going after your daughter or your son. Why are the daughter and the son there? These mama bovines, having just given birth to a calf, are apparently a menace to society. Yeah, come on out, little Timmy and little Susie. Now, fumbling around with a lock while a cow or a bull or any other animal is going after your daughter or your son, you can't fumble around with a key or try to find a lockbox or put your thumb on a biometric key of some sort in your home while the danger is outside. Wait a minute! This fucker's in his house? Yeah, we got the cow castle doctrine here in Minnesota, mister. I'm sorry, ma'am. Can I go home now? Can we survive stupidity at this level? Is it time for us to set up a mass viewing of Idiocracy on Zoom or something?
And I'm gonna fuck all y'all.
And this legislation puts those individuals in even more danger than they would ordinarily face from their own cows. What I'm trying to figure out is how the cow is working the doorknob. Anybody? If only I had thumbs. And for anybody who's even remotely interested in the statistics behind this, less than 24 Americans die per year. From predatory cows. Look, there was a time when, and this is back when the Sahara was a vast sea of grass. It was a huge grassland. And early wild cattle, who had big, sharp, nasty horns, I don't know why I said that in my bad Minnesota accent. I, honest to Jesus, don't. But I did. And hunters with, like, spears They were hunter-gatherers. They weren't farmers. They were hunter-gatherers. And they would take their spears and go after the wild cattle. Yeah, I know. Ralph says, maybe it's lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. Yes. And that could be a dicey proposition because they're big beasts and things like that. I mean, or think of the earliest Americans with their atlats and spears and the like, their Clovis points, wandering around the North American continent, hunting mastodons and giant ground sloths and buffalo and you know, poor Senator Limmer didn't even get around to the buffalo, the threat from the buffaloes and the bisons. There's actually video of it, but I thought I haven't done a bad maggot Minnesota accent in a long time. And if the goddess of irony is at all kind, she'll make sure I don't have to for a while. I kind of retired that when batshit crazy. Oh, come on. She was married to the guy who fillets corn dogs at the Minnesota State Fair. Used to be a member. And now she's the president of, like, Pat Robertson University or something. Never mind. It doesn't matter. We don't have to. No. We'll just leave that be. Actually, no, I don't, Reverbo. You think ancient hunter-gatherers spoke like contemporary Minnesotans? That would explain the delightful accent. Oh, God. Hard to believe we're over halfway through the program. I had no idea, Ron and Raleigh. Yosemite Sam, since you brought him up, Michelle Bachman, thank you, Ralphs. Since you brought him up, did you know that Yosemite Sam's last name was Rosenbaum? Yes, Yosemite Sam is Jewish. I guess when he goes off, he's speaking in Yiddish. Learn something new every day. Yes, Cynthia, Michelle Bachman, or whatever the hell her name was, and whatever the hell his name was Marcus. And remember, Marcus ran a conversion therapy outfit. Were corn dogs part of the conversion therapy? I don't know. And Cynthia, Ralphs. I do not want to know. As to Idiocracy, Flavio says, hey, we didn't even have to wait until 2505. Idiocracy was set 500 years in the future from 2005 when it was made, yes. Welcome to Costco. I love you. Black Swan Event, thank you. Thank you to Ralphs and Randy Radar. Serving as the Horn Black Swan Event Ad Hoc Research Department. It comes from the world of high finance. An extremely negative event or occurrence that is impossibly difficult to predict. Black swan events are events that are unexpected and unknowable. The term was popularized by former Wall Street trader Nassim Nicholas Taleb, who wrote about the concept in his 2001 book, Fooled by Randomness. It goes back to the 2nd century. And who? Rome. That's who. Rome. It was believed that in the 2nd century of the Common Era, it was believed that all swans were white. And black swans were presumed not to exist, as none had ever been observed. I could spend the rest of this second hour just on that, but no. In 1500s London, a black swan was used to denote something impossible. But eventually, in Australia, of course, black swans were observed by a Dutch explorer in the late 1600s, and it upended the scientific swan consensus. Andrew Taint. Let's don't say we didn't. And just because we haven't heard from him in so long, Ron and Raleigh sent this moment of stupidity along. It, of course, comes from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And I'm going to play it because we haven't heard from him in a while, and he's looking a little rough. I'm talking about Tracy's fellow Angeleno, Jesse Lee Peterson, who the last time we heard of him had been caught, you know, after railing year after year after year against homosexuality, had been caught with a man in his mouth. And so, naturally, he gets interviewed at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda because he's a reverend. Works better if you use the right button, Roxanne. All better now.
But conservative radio host, Reverend Jesse Lee Peterson. Reverend, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Here's a black voter on why they're considering voting for Donald Trump. Watch.
Right now, I couldn't tell you that if they open the polls tomorrow, I'm voting for Joe Biden.
So what changed?
Life. I want the right person so that I'm not paying $8 for eggs, $15 for gas. The way these last 3 or 4 years have been, this is the worst it's ever been in my life. I never would have even considered thinking about voting for Donald Trump, but living in America these last 4, it's a consideration.
They asked him what happened. He said life happened, and it's been hard for some of these young men.
Absolutely. Even if I was black enough, I couldn't afford to vote for Joe Biden this time. And I hear this all over, everywhere I go. And as you know, for a long time, blacks was committed to the, were committed to the Democratic Party. That's no longer the case because the Democrats have clearly tossed black to the sides, and they're not looking out for them anymore. They just want to vote.
Yeah.
And so black people are starting to feel the economic crisis.
Is it just the economy, Reverend?
It's the economy. It's the borders. What is not being talked about, a lot of these illegal aliens are coming in, and they're ending up in the black communities.
In the schools.
Yes. In the schools, they're the gang violence.
Not in the schools.
Gangs and the Hispanic gangs and other gangs that are coming in. It's out of control.
Yeah.
You're just not hearing a lot about that because...
And I don't think people realize in these underserved cities, when you flood the...
I need a little help here. Was he saying these Asian gays and these... Mexican, was that? I'm having a hard time.
These underserved schools,
yeah,
with people who are not legally here, it's devastating for the students who are already there.
Absolutely. The blacks are affected first and foremost by it. But because their black leadership don't care, they're in government for themselves, for money and power. The blacks don't really have anyone to represent them. So you're starting to hear a lot of them speak out now about what's really happening. And I have to even tell you, even my own family members, I never imagined that they would be voting for Donald Trump. They're saying yes to Trump now. And it started really with Obama. A lot of blacks thought that Obama would do more for them, but he didn't get jobs. He didn't provide for them. And under Joe Biden, it just wiped them out. They cannot afford to vote for Joe Biden anymore.
It's amazing. Reverend, thank you for coming on, sir.
We appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Reverend. The collective IQ of the viewing audience just dropped by 100 points, and they did not have 100 points to give. As Ron and Raleigh pointed out, Jesse Lee didn't want to miss out on the grift. And would you? No. So apparently his... you know, I've preached to congregations all over the country. I've preached to Methodists. I've preached to Baptists. I've preached to Apostolic Holiness. Do they call me Jesse Lee, the ecumenical preacher? Suck one cock! I knew that joke would come in handy. Forgive me. And by the way, so the kerfuffle over, and it's not a kerfuffle, it was actually a moral outrage over NBC hiring Ronna Romney McDaniel, the professional liar. Well, the woman who hired Ronna Romney McDaniel probably hired her because she facilitated NBC getting a debate. But Ronna Romney McDaniel also said, but the debate cannot, it can be carried on NBC, but it cannot be carried on MSNBC. Well, that woman had come to be the vice president of politics for NBC News, having previously been some sort of an editor at Politico, and so you get an idea where the brilliance came from. And it blew up in NBC space. We had the clip yesterday of Joe and Mika saying, not on this air, she won't. And so now the next fallback trench was, well, okay, not on MSNBC, but, you know, we'll have her on NBC. That has now changed. It's official, Ronna Romney McDaniel. Why do we keep saying Ronna McDaniel without saying Romney and reminding the world that she comes from that bunch? Ronna Romney McDaniel will not be hired as a contributor for NBC News after all. The widely reported hire of the outgoing Republican National Committee chair triggered outrage from much of the network's audience and from its reporters and staff owing to McDaniel's propagation of 2020 election conspiracy theories and her attacks on the network's own reporters. Even Chuck Todd spoke out and criticized it. This evening, NBC Universal chairman Cesar Conde said, there is no doubt that the last several days have been difficult for the news group. After listening to the legitimate concerns of many of you, I've decided that Ronna McDaniel will not be an NBC News contributor. No organization, particularly a newsroom, can succeed unless it is cohesive and aligned. Over the last few days, it has become clear that this appointment undermines that goal. I want to personally apologize to our team members. Team members. Uses the same phrase for professional journalists at NBC that Walmart uses for its deeply underpaid employees. I want to personally apologize to our team members who felt we let them down. While this was a collective recommendation by some members of our leadership team,
I approved it and take full responsibility for it.
It's a far cry from throwing oneself on one's sword. As Darlene in Connecticut noted, lol. No, you're far from it, Cynthia. Michelle Bachmann, I remembered. I'm not demented yet. Well, as long as you don't say disinformates or misinformates, Cynthia, and I think you never will, you're good. What did I say yesterday, Kevin says? It's not only a two-tier justice system we have here in the good old USA, it's a two-tiered system overall and in virtually every facet of American life. You are so right, Kevin, in Colorado Springs. Randy Radar, I see an invisible spirit right over there. So, y'all, hey, if we could finish this up this evening, it would be huge. We have $120 to go on Cat in Ohio's Keep Robin's Head Above Water, Let's Pay the Bills Challenge. $120 to go. We've got three slots of $22 each from our buddy Zed in Iowegia. So we've got a chance to knock this thing out. If three more 22s, $22 contributions, three more of those, and we are done with, we have finished, completed both Cat's Challenge and Zed's. And those three $22 challenges remaining mean that your money is tripled, not just doubled. As if just doubling was a just kind of thing. That's a big deal. So that would be huge. And then that means that we've only got Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. If we can raise $700, we're fully funded for the month of March. Whew. And I do things like paying the phone bill, power bill, property taxes, and yes, my health insurance. Because I worry about that every month. All of them. But having health insurance is really cool. I've not had it a lot more than I have. So let's take a moment and run to the stress line. Run, Roxanne, run. See what we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, don't break a heel on the way over to the phone, Robin.
Well, thank you, Dave. I'll try not to. I try not to run in heels. That leads me to tottering.
It's just a bad look all the way around, especially this early in the spring.
Bad? It's terrifying.
You know, of course, that you're going to hear from Tracy after invoking certain individuals.
Oh, if you think I didn't do that, if you think I didn't do that on purpose, think again.
I was wondering where he'd been keeping himself. He was probably
in a closet, Dave. In a closet, but. You know, I did that just for Tracy's benefit because, you know,
there's no door on that closet.
Because she calls in and says, did you hear what your boy Joe Manchin did today? And if Joe Manchin's my boy, then Jesse Lee Peterson is her home slice. By the way, she's already pissed off about the raisins.
Oh, let's not get into the raisinist controversy, shall we? Let's just avoid that. But you know, Robin, I'm thinking with all the tomfoolery up in Minnesota. I think that we at Dave and the Blind Crucifixion Emporium, I think
crazy
we
days,
are,
yes.
You know, I haven't discussed this with anybody in legal or anything, but if we, since it's spring, and as you know, if we get enough Nerf bats and paper sacks, we could lead some of these Republicans out into the middle of the woods in Minnesota and have a good old-fashioned grand old snipe hunt.
Here. Oh, by the way, and since you mentioned the horrors of rural families in rural Minnesota, I thought you might. I got some further research on this. Do you know what these dangerous bovines use when they attack the hapless, innocent rural farmers living in rural Minnesota with their rural children? Do you know what their weapon of choice is?
Their what?
Get ready, Billable. They attack with cowitzers.
Well, I thought they attacked barbers in Minnesota to get rid of the cowlicks.
Tough crowd, Dave. Cowitzers? Really? That's
No. I said cowlicks.
No, I said cowitzers.
Well, yeah,
howitzers for cows?
Yes, I let's not play explain the joke. I get it.
Now, when you got to explain the joke, the joke's already dead.
Christine had a coffee. I'm a comedian, Robin, not a doctor.
Well, apparently I'm not a comedian either. Sure.
But, no, Christine had a coffee cup that said, they call it PMS, and in the bottom of the cup, on the very bottom, it had printed, because mad cow disease is already taken.
Oh, boo.
I'm speaking of my beloved ex. I have news from Chicago. Christine has proven she can still sew with a sewing machine. So she's going back to making quilts. And she, I'll tell you, Robin, she said, I didn't think I could do it for years. And she said, they gave me the needle and thread and I just started doing it. And I said, that's kinesthetic memory. She'd been quilting for so many years, it just came naturally to her. She said she was almost in tears. And the kinds of things that she's learning up there right now, they're giving her a new computer setup so she can write her short stories and things again, which she hasn't done in 3 years. And writing has always been a very important part of her life. And so we've got a lot to celebrate. She knows that there are a lot of people in the Horn Family Community Congregation pulling for it, and she wanted me to thank all of you all for that.
The entirety of the Horn Family Community Congregation, Dave.
I told her, I said, Christine, there are a lot of disabled people in the Horn Family Community Congregation, and we tend to be the ones that yell the loudest. I'm thinking of myself and Darlene and Tristan, you know.
Oh, and by the way, I don't know. By the way, I don't know if he's listening, but Tristan's really been going through a rough patch. I got a note from him that I need to respond to.
Oh no.
He's hanging on, but it's just, he's just been having a hard time. So, Send out your best thoughts, your best hopes.
I will, and I'll let Christine know. You know, hang in there, Tristan. It will get better. And if there's one thing I know about this community, we're always there for each other. I remember when Christine had her stroke, how people just reached out to me and told me, Dave, it's going to be all right. I remember Shorty in L.A. telling me to not worry about it. Christine was going to be fine. And you're right, Shorty. So I don't know what the particular issue you're confronting is right now, but know that you've got a lot of people pulling for you. And Robin is one of the best people who has one of the best ears in the business. I mean, there were a lot of times when I've gone to her for advice, and she's given me great advice.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
Even when I didn't want to do it. So that's how important this community is. And God, I got so worried yesterday, and I was telling Christine about it. She and I are going to be getting together soon and getting a few things straightened out. And at that point, I might even be calling you from her blind one evening. After I programmed in the stress line number to her phone so she can call whenever she wants. But I wanted to say thank you to the Horn Family Community Congregation for everything you've done for us over the years. You know, the thoughts, the encouragement. And that's the most important thing about this little experiment and conversation radio. I once watched a speech when Michelle Bachmann was speechifying on the campaign trail when she was running for president. And she was railing against the gays. Do you know I saw her dancing with a fat woman right afterward? Later, I found out it was her husband, Marcus. And the mistake can't be made because, girl, he was wearing an E-cup if there was ever a man bra made.
Oh, dear God. What have I started? Oh, by the way, I'll have you know that Darlene wrote in and said on the Cowitzer's quip, no, that was a good one, Roxanne. You had me laughing. So, at least I made somebody giggle. Cowitzer's.
All right. I hope Wanda's doing well.
We wonder about Wanda.
Yes, we do wonder about her a lot. But
and Ralph said, "Oh, Robin and Dave, I know something needs to be done. Something needs to be done here, Ralph. I don't know what it is, but something does." Thank you, Ralph. Ralph's filled one of the remaining slots of Zed's challenge, and one of our kind anonymous internet friends, one of those. Has said they're down for the same. So one more left. There's one more left, and Zed's challenge is met, and that makes five people at $22, and they actually get their money tripled because it goes into Kat's challenge as well. So that's profound. Thank you, Zed. Thank you, Kat.
Wow.
And the response has been just simply amazing, Dave, because I only announced that about an hour into the program yesterday,
and we are...
I know.
Yeah, we're very close to having it met, and that gives us 3 days to knock down the rest of March, and that is so, so profound. Again, thank you, Kat, and thank you for today's challenges.
And with everything piling on...
Yeah, this month, yeah, this month is brutal.
It makes me count my blessings, Robin. It really does. I mean, I'm not supporting a house and a car and that sort of thing, but
trying to re-excavate the Olympic-sized pancreas-shaped swimming pool? No.
Oh, and don't forget the rental on the steamroller for the runway for the...
Gulfstream 5, yes.
For the Gulfstream 5, yeah. Once we get that back from the repossessors.
Yeah, well, we ain't flying no Boeings.
John Denver's dad was a pilot for Lear. He trained pilots on how to fly.
That's right.
The various Lear jets. I thought that was kind of cool. But, I was drinking a cup of instant coffee before I called you in. Said a small intercessory prayer to Scott to help me through the call. And well, I think I've had a good evening so far. However, I do have one small bone to pick with you.
Oh no. What have I done?
Did you have to bring up Justice Tommy? I mean, the thought that he might actually be Kathy's great-grandpa? God.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Sammy Bad Breath's people were here yet, but, well. Wait, hold on, though. I mean, do you know off the top of your head, where was Justice Tawney from?
I'm not sure. I think he might have been from Kentucky.
Maryland.
I want to say he was from Maryland.
Yep, Calvert County.
Okay. Well, Maryland was a slave state.
And that evil man lived to the age of 87. But he died just in time for Abraham Lincoln to get... Salmon P. Chase out of his hair and put him on the Supreme Court.
Well, at least he did one service to the country. And Salmon P. Chase was no award winner either. But I still say that it ought to be a situation where originally, the Supreme Court justices were assigned to an individual circuit, and they rode that circuit during the court's recess. And they heard cases. And in some of those cases, they would bring them back to the Supreme Court and explain certain particulars about the cases in their deliberations. And so I think it would make sense to me to have one justice assigned to each circuit, but to have enough justices to handle all the circuits, and you could say the Chief Justice would be in charge of the D.C. Circuit. Makes a lot of sense. If you want to go back to the originalist interpretations of things, that should shut up those Oh, they're trying to pack the court bullshit. This has more to do with the fair administration of the law, not allowing these guys to claim that the court's not political when we, when everything they're doing says the exact opposite. I didn't know it was International Opposite Day, but oh, and speaking of days, you know the Trump religious movement, the maggots. Well, the incels celebrated Masturbation Sunday last Sunday.
Really now?
Yeah, yeah. They're rallying cry. I'm a man. I'll put it in my hand. Palm Sunday. There you go. Oh, I know. The llama is a little tired now, I understand.
Weary. After this evening, after this evening so far, the llama is wore plumb out.
Poor thing. Make sure she gets plenty of good soldering. Gets a good rub down before she goes to bed. She sounds like she's all tuckered out. There's nothing more miserable than a tuckered out llama.
Well, you know, I was just since we were talking about Roger Taney, I did a little bit of research. There, to the best of my knowledge, there is nothing in the United States named after Roger B. Taney.
Don't say that too loudly, Robin. They might name a bridge after him. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that a racist had a bridge named after him. Hell, it wouldn't be the second time either. And with Pettus, yeah. Francis Scott Key, yeah.
Well, he's got two. There's the one that collapsed, and the one over the Potomac in D.C.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the key bridge goes from
Baltimore would have one.
Basically, the key bridge goes from Roslyn in Virginia across to Georgetown.
Okay.
Okay, and a little clarification courtesy of Reverbo, who would know. No, Maryland was not a total slave state. Here and there, yes, but mostly a solid Union state when the shots started firing. And Lincoln did everything in his power to make sure that he didn't piss off Maryland because he desperately wanted to keep them in the Union. And that's why the Emancipation...
Well,
and that's why, as you know, that's why the Emancipation Proclamation only applied to the states in active rebellion. And by the way,
right, the border states out of it.
Darlene in Connecticut said, thanks for inquiring, Dave. Wanda remains the most expensive dust collector I've ever owned. I hope to take her for a spin sometime.
Well, put some of your papers under it.
I hope to take her for a spin sometime in May and hope to take my driver's test this year. Darlene, God knows we are all rooting for you, hon.
And you know what I would suggest, Darlene, once you get your license, go on a weekend trip with her. I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be a big trip. Go somewhere you like, enjoy the afternoon, and come home. I'm sure she'll be happy with it. I saw a card, so I don't know who designed it, but it's designed to load from the back, and it's a one-passenger vehicle, and you wheel your wheelchair up into it and lock yourself in position, and all the hand controls are there. And I thought that would be something interesting to learn to drive. But at my age, I'd be afraid my reaction time would not be safe. Besides, if I have a spasm, I'd end up going from the right-hand lane to the left-hand lane, not even realize it. So. The funny thing is, though, I think it happens to be with Moses Mike situation. You know, if he's got some solid assurances from the Democrats, he'll put that Ukraine bill out there and dare Marjorie to fucking say one goddamn word.
Oh, and by the
way,
I was just going to say, by the way, Brendan serving as the Horn ad hoc Roger, things named after Roger B. Taney Research Department said, hey, lady, hey, Brendan, there used to be a destroyer escort. I believe the Roger B. Taney docked in Baltimore Harbor. Fuck all of those motherfucking Republic Bagger cons. Hear, hear, Republic Bagger cons. Damn, that's a fine word. Thanks, Brendan. And Darlene said, Darlene would be happy getting away for a bit, for sure. To clarify, I do have a valid driver's license. It just needs a special stamp that says I can drive an adaptive vehicle. I have no doubt it gets so wearisome, Darlene. Oh, and you know how I said earlier that the minute I saw about the bridge this morning, the first thing that popped into my mind was, oh no, somebody's going to make a Mothman reference. Well, I just got a notification over on Reddit in the West Virginia sub. There's the classic picture of the Mothman. Oh. He has struck again, followed by a photo of the bridge coming down.
You know, here's the thing, though, Robin. This could have been far more tragic than it is. And the unfortunate thing is these athletes that are so locked into conspiracy theories, the grunters and squealers on the right, especially the faith squealers, who always see bad people in the bushes or, in this case, upon the rolling waves. It sounds to me like the captain and crew of the Dolly did everything they could when they realized that they were in a situation to mitigate it. And those things don't stop on a dime. And I heard this morning they were going at about 8 knots. And so if they're going to have a fully loaded cargo ship hit a bridge at 8 knots, something's going to give. And they haven't even gotten into the investigation. I heard the head of the National Transportation Safety Board say, look, we just got here. And the reporters dutifully asked questions that she had absolutely no idea what was going on, or that wasn't within the safety board's purview. they were asking her questions about the Coast Guard. You'd think that when they had their bottled water in journalism school, they would have taught them, well, if the speaker tells you they just got there and they don't have information, don't ask them the stupid question.
Point taken.
You begin to wonder how some of these people got their jobs. I mean,
do we really?
Granted, Ernie Pyle, none of them are. Walter Winchell, none of them are. Hell, Walter Cronkite? No, they're not him either.
No, and
Helder.
They're Howard K. Smith, Huntley, Brinkley. No, their like will not be seen again.
Right.
Because news divisions have been turned into profit centers.
It's gone from news to entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And infotainment.
And now we know, of course, who got that ball rolling. A man named Rune Arledge.
Yeah.
Who was brought from that poor dude going down the ski jump, the agony of defeat, at Wide World of Sports to running ABC News. I mean, you know, ugh.
I mean, there was a time when network news brought on actual newsmen from papers,
well, that's
radio.
Well, hold on. That's because there were papers.
Yeah.
That's back when newspapers That's back when newspaper mastheads didn't say via big truck. You remember when USA Today first came out and it was all splashy via satellite? Really, a satellite's beaming my newspaper? And this is before the internet. A satellite's beaming my newspaper down to me every morning? Really?
Well, it was in color.
Yes.
And it was in color. There was a lot of color photos in USA Today. That was the flash. And it just seemed to me like the couple of times I bought it, it seemed more like the National Enquirer with about as much journalism.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. No, it wasn't hard hitting. No.
And that's why I think this thing with Ronald Rodman McDaniels was so interesting because it was the on-air people at MSNBC that said no.
Yeah, they led the coup. Well, look, when Chuck Todd is offended, you know you fucked up. Because Chuck Todd is the Mikey in Life Cereal, in the Life Cereal ad of network news.
He'll take anything. On behalf of the April 8th Society, I have to apologize to Chuck. He and I share a birthday. He's a few years younger than I am. But his birthday's on April the 8th, as is mine, as is my uncle's, and one of my sister's nieces. So on behalf of the April 8th Society, I apologize to the world for Chuck But at least I'm blowing the hog gets an acorn every so often. And he got his this weekend. So, good for you, Chuck. Keep up the good work. One day you might actually be thought of as a newsman. When you grow up. It's all about flash and access now. It's not about getting to the bottom of something. And this started back during the Nixon administration. Because we let Nixon off the hook, that led to Reagan being let off the hook, which taught them that as long as the president has deniability, we can get away with murder. Until Nitwit Nero, who was too incompetent to keep his fucking mouth shut. They've been dismantling the democracy for over 50 years. This is a long-term project.
Oh, I think it is. It goes back to the blood oath the Republicans swore when the Social Security Act was signed into law.
And do you know the only reason FDR didn't run as a Republican?
No.
Three of his cousins, T.R.'s kids. And that side of the family were running on the were actively supporting the Republican Party. And FDR felt that one more Roosevelt in the Republican Party, he'd get lost. So he sidled up to the Democrats, thankfully. He might have been a bigoted SOB, but I'll tell you one thing. He could think things through. And he had nothing to prove to anybody. The man had been an assistant secretary of the Navy. He'd served as governor of New York. He had this noblesse oblige attitude that was beaten into him as a child. But he told people in the progressive movement, push me, because I can't be seen to openly support it. Push me into it. And they did. And this country was far better for it. But he understood politics at a granular level. And I think we're getting back to that slowly. You know, we've got the Eric Swalwells. We've got, I'm now watching Shirley on Netflix about Shirley Chisholm.
Oh, my.
And I'm thinking, oh, my God, yes. And you know what I think Mike ought to do if Marjorie fails to remove him from the speaker's office, he ought to sit down immediately and strip her of her committee assignments. Because as the leader of the Republicans, he has that power. Not that it will bother Marjorie any. She hasn't, to my knowledge, she has not yet once introduced a bill on her own behalf. I don't think she can read, Robin.
I'll see that in Rasia. I don't think she can think. I got some Marge in the stack today.
As long as it's not an audio clip, I'm good.
Oh, you're pushy. Yeah, there she is.
Yes, I am.
Via Newsweek and reporter Julia Carbonaro, Marjorie Taylor Greene launches blistering attack on Mike Johnson. The Mike Johnson-Chuck Schumer uniparty minibus rejects riders in the House bill, including policies aimed at curbing the FBI's use of politicized abuses and the administration's broader use.
Marjorie, if you're so smart, here's my advice, sweetheart. Write the bill and then introduce it on the floor. And when they laugh you off the floor, you can fundraise off of it. That's what you usually do when they laugh at you.
And this being Titanic Tuesday, and this being Titanic Tuesday, though, Dave, we should probably cover a little ground here.
All right.
The New York Jets, J-E-T-S, Jets, 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 have another problem. Whose name, curiously enough, isn't Aaron Rodgers. A star at the Jets by the name of Sauce Gardner, in a conversation with someone named Aiden Ross, they were talking about how, because, you know, bromances, right? Well, damn, the Mountaineers lost 64-54 to the Iowa Hawkeyes. Son of a gun. Caitlin Clark poured in 32 points. I mean, Jesus, she's a machine. But the bromance world, Sauce Gardner was talking with Aiden Ross about how Ross was able to get himself a Tesla Cybertruck when it first came out. And Aiden Ross said, "A Jew sold it to me because I'm Jewish." At which point, cornerback Sauce Gardner declared, "I'm going to be honest. Like, no funny weird shit. You all run the world. They got so damn much motion throughout the whole world."
Oh, Jesus.
Y'all got to see how they be walking in the airport. And you know, you'd think an African-American man, considering everything that black folks put up with concerning their hair, would not be out there talking about the Lubavitchers or the Hasidim's, you know, locks. And of course, in the clip, all the dude bros were like, ha, 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 ha. And then they went on talking about how Jews rule the world. And then Aiden Ross said, I'm going to tell you all the truth. First of all, everyone here is allowed to speak about Jews because I'm going to give everyone the Jew pass. Y'all are observing. I'm not offended. Dear God.
Now, welcome to the local English language translation of Jews for Hitler.
Welcome to... Oh, dear God. This shit gets so tiresome. I just have to find out. Where did Sauce Gardner... I got to find out. Where did Sauce Gardner go play his college ball? University of Cincinnati.
That explains it.
I mean, anywhere that puts cinnamon
in
anywhere that puts cinnamon in their spaghetti sauce, damn it.
Cincinnati is one of those places, and I say it like that because a lot of my dad's father's family was from Lower Sandusky and Cincinnati, and they would always pronounce it Cincinnati.
I've heard that.
That's how I can tell. If somebody's actually from that area, because they're actually from Cincinnati, they won't pronounce it that way. They'll pronounce it Cincinnati.
And the same, well, the same out in portions of that state that where Mark Twain was born. When I was going to school there, it was Missouri, but there were pockets of that state where it was Missouri. Harry Truman said Missouri.
Yeah. Yes, he did. And there are places in Indiana, south of I-40. There's a reason they say south of 40, because you might as well be in northern Kentucky at that point linguistically.
Oh, that's kind of like the rather profound difference between Little Egypt and, you know, southern Illinois and places further north. I have a dear friend out there, pay him well.
Yeah.
And I asked him what it was like, because we went to school together at WVU. And I said, so what's Little Egypt, you know, Carbondale, southern Illinois? He said, oh, you know, it's not bad. But he said, oh, Robin, it's flat. It's just flat. And just the disappointment in the way he enunciated the word flat. Yeah, I mean, I said, you mean you can drop a marble and it won't move? He said, yes.
Now, Robin, there is something I have to discuss with you concerning the holidays.
Yes.
Well, see, the marketing folks down at the shop, but they asked me to ask you about this.
Yeah.
Since you were born in Alabama, and I believe you attended school down there.
I did.
If you might be willing to recite The Night Before Christmas, while wearing a University of Alabama sweatshirt, and this will be targeted strictly to Alabama fans, but you read the Night Before Christmas as using your Yul Brynner voice.
Oh,
the name of the offering is Yuletide.
Oh, Dave, you went such a long way for that.
I know. Don't. Oh, you have to wake her up for that.
Oh, she woke up by herself. She heard it.
Go back to sleep, honey. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bother you. And go back to dreaming about nice tall grass and the
tall, lush grasses of the ancient Sahara. Yes.
I have a friend who,
even though they're, you know, even though they're Andean,
and I have a friend who grew up on a dairy farm, and he had, He would disagree with that whole, you know, cows being aggressive who just gave birth to calves, because he said, if the cast is having trouble getting on to the mama's udder, they have to literally guide the poor little thing to it to show it exactly where they're supposed to put their mouth. And it's all in how the cows are raised.
It all begins in the barn as opposed to the home.
Right, exactly. He trained some of their cattle to come out of the pasture. If he drove his truck down there, honk the horn twice and flashed his headlights, and then they would follow him to the barn without him having to go and get them, because he had trained them as calves to do that. So this thing of, oh, we got to protect the rural farm families. You know, every firearms owner I've ever known has at the very least had a trigger lock on their weapons. I had a friend whose son found his pistol in the closet one day, and he shot himself in the head looking at it, because the kid didn't know what he was doing, and his finger pulled the trigger and it went off. And he lived through it, but he was effectively brain dead. And
Jesus.
You know, common sense would tell you. And I was raised around hunters and you know, Second Amendment types. But that generation, my stepdad's generation, the generation when I grew up in Houston, my buddy's dad was a detective with the Harris County Sheriff's Office. He had his .38 on the front seat of his patrol car one morning when we were going to school. And back then, this would have been the early 70s. All he had to tell us was not to touch it. But he went one step further. He said, if we found a gun on the playground or something, to go tell one of our parents, and they could call the police and the police could come get it, you know. And so being good 9 and 10 year olds, we were like, yeah, no problem, you know. Now they don't teach those things. They don't teach kids to stay out of the medicine cabinet. That was a regular thing when I was a kid, and I'm sure it was when you were too. The Mr. Yuck stickers. Those of us of a certain age.
Oh, yes. Hold on. I'm even so old that I remember Patch the Pony. You remember Patch the Pony?
No, I don't. I don't remember that.
Patch the Pony was an ad campaign designed to keep children from getting in cars with strangers, if I recall correctly.
Oh.
And Patch was a pony with a patch over his eye. I don't know why. And his motto was, nay, nay, stay away. And now I have to double check to make sure that maybe Patch the Pony was a precursor to Mr. Yucky.
But there was a lot of this stuff. They would get famous cartoonists to write, to draw strips for public safety campaigns, you know, using a seatbelt, stay out of the medicine cabinet, don't play with matches, that kind of thing. And which, of course, you know, the playing with matches thing immediately made you want to go and play with the matches, but you knew you were going to get your backside blistered if you got caught doing it. So there was a little deterrent there. But I'm so old, Robin, that when the television station or the radio station would say, "We're having technical difficulties, please stand by," we would run up to the television or the radio and stand next to it.
Wow. Well, I just looked up Patch the Pony. I just looked up Patch the Pony real quick, and this is interesting because, you know, we have this notion that, you know, you've got to have helicopter parenting, and you know, Gen X says, "Hey, we were raised by the boomers. We were just told to go out and don't come home till the sun sets." But Patch the Pony was 1968. And
well, that's why I didn't remember it, because I would have only been like 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah. But
I didn't go anywhere.
Here's his backstory. One day, Patch sees one of his little friends about to be lured into the car of a stranger with a gift of bubble gum. Patch shoves the child away from the car and kicks the door shut. Another child takes the license number of the car. The school principal notifies the sheriff, who apprehends the criminal, and appoints Patch his deputy. The PTA gives the pony a shining black saddle, and Patch says, ride with me, children, but never ride in a stranger's car. And Patch teaches children never to get into a stranger's car, never to accept presents, candy, money, or anything else from strangers, and never to follow a stranger anywhere, no matter what kind of treat is promised.
And you know, my mother went to a funeral home one time when I was little. And she took me with her, and I sat in the funeral home's office, and one of the funeral directors, an older gentleman, offered me candy, and I refused, absolutely refused, politely, but no. I told him, "I'm not allowed to take candy from strangers, and I don't know you." Well, my mom comes out of the viewing, and the funeral director told my mom, he was proud of me. He said, "Your son refused candy when I offered it to him, and he said he couldn't take it because he didn't know me. I was a stranger." And so my mom told me I could accept it. And I remember what the candy was. It was those hot cinnamon wheels.
Yeah.
You know, those little Brock's cinnamon wheels?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I see a lot of this stuff. I came up in the time when the parents said, "Go home and be back before the street lights come on."
Mm-hmm.
And you could have it timed right down to the second. Mine was the last generation that could walk themselves down to the local candy shop and come back with a bag full of tooth decaying candies and, you know, like lemon heads and Boston baked beans and something you can't get except in specialty shops now, the candied cigarettes. You remember the candy cigarettes?
Oh, God, yes.
For those of you who don't know, they were these really, really thin, like toothpick thin candies that were colored and shaped like cigarettes that had the lighted end on them and everything. But now there's only one place in town here where I can get them, and that's a specialty candy shop that tailors to older people like me who remember those old candies, you know. So but why do we put up with people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and those politicians who go, we've got to protect the children, when as many mistakes as my parents made, God knows they made plenty of them, they made sure we knew where the bright lines were, you know. And they enforced them. And that would take care of a good chunk of this. I realize you've got to adapt the laws for things like technology and stuff like that. But if, I swear to God, if I hear, well, we're doing it to protect the children, when it's nothing but a vicious corporate grab, hence Donald John Trump making $4 billion on his Tripe Social. And just so happens that, well, his friends and family are on the board, so getting approval to convert his stocks won't be of any real consequence. And what is the old Sonny Cher tune, And the Grift Goes On?
Oh, yes.
Well, Robin, I've been on here long enough.
It's been a lovely conversation. It always is.
And I will let the guys down at the shop know that you're doing well. And
tell them I'm totally down for... Tell them I'm totally down for Yuletide.
All right. We'll set up the recording, and that could become a holiday tradition for a lot of Alabama fans. All right.
It could be big. Dave, you have a good evening. Give our best to Christine.
I will. And try not to summon Tracy so often. She's a busy lady.
All right. I'll talk to you later, Dave.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Dave in the blind. Great conversation. Still proud of Cowitzer. Yuletide. He went such a long way for that. Apparently you can still get candy cigarettes. Thanks, Lee. I'd prefer not to get that close to my addiction again, if that's okay. By the way, as to Missouri, Reverbo asked, who would pronounce it Missouri? What kind of knucklehead would pronounce it like that? Well, a knucklehead named Harry S. Truman, for starters. Actually, Missouri's a fairly big state, and there's all kinds of different accents in it. People from Kansas City don't necessarily sound like people from St. Louis. And God knows nobody sounds like somebody from Cape Girardeau. My friends with half my brain tied behind my back. Yeah, that MF-er was from Cape Girardeau, but we can't hold it against them. All right. There has been so much Titanic intellect today that it has been damn difficult. It's been impossible, so I'm going to run a little long probably because I was a couple minutes late. But just a reminder, please like each episode. Subscribe if you haven't. It helps. It really does. Oh, and by the way, we got one more $22 slot to be doubled by Zed, and then become part of Cat's Keep Robin's Head Above Water Challenge. Thank you both, and thank you for your challenge, Ralphs, and thank you for jumping in and filling one of those slots. There's one left, $22, gets tripled by Zed, and then by Cat's challenge, and then we'd be done, and we can go to work on the on finishing the rest of March with prayer meeting Wednesday. As the hearing, as the oral arguments were taking place today, I had notes from Joy in Ann Arbor. And I always enjoy her comments. Man, Alito is licking his chops. He's aching to take away more rights from us filthy women at any cost. It's judicial rape. I can hear the saliva dripping. So, OBs only want to deal with pregnancies with happy outcomes? Are they unaware of how messy, sad, and tragic that profession can be? Please pursue a different career. Every doctor should expect to help someone who did something that the doctor disagrees with, but they go ahead and help them. Curiously enough, I mentioned Idiocracy earlier, where the best minds in medical science make it possible for Cletus to continue reproducing even after a horrifying accident involving a jet ski and a fence post. Every doctor should expect to help someone who did something that the doctor disagrees with, but they go ahead and help them. Your kid stuck a pee up his nose? That's stupid. Not going to help him. You overdosed on drugs? Fuck you. I'm not going to pump your stomach. You fell off a ladder and broke your leg? Set it yourself, idiot. And Joy rather captured the tenor of some of the right-wing maggot aspects of our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties. And Alito was particularly... Look, this dude is probably the most gynomesiac asshole ever to sit on the court. And I would call him an asshole to his face if the chance ever presented itself. The degree of disgust that he holds for women, you know, I almost feel sorry for his wife. And it's all born of his reading, his toxic reading of his religion. At the time of the founding of this country, people like John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, George Washington, and most of the others were deeply skeptical of the Roman Catholic Church because of the behavior of the Roman Catholic Church over the centuries, especially in regard to England. And Adams was unsparing in his criticism. And they wanted to build a republic that would not be subject to the dictates of faraway divines. And everything they were afraid of is embodied in the likes of Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas and Brat Kavanaugh, Beer Boof and Brat, and The Handmaid. But far and away, if you've read the Dobbs decision, and I have, we have, it is Sammy Bad Breath who manifests the most profound hatred of anything having to do with women. And so he was a genuine prick today. And questioning the Solicitor General, Sammy Bad Breath, and the Solicitor General is Elizabeth Preligar. I'm sure he was absolutely disgusted to even have to speak to a woman. I'm sorry, it was when he was questioning Jessica Ellsworth, another disgusting woman, who was actually a lawyer for Danco Laboratories. He said, during the questioning of the Solicitor General, the statement was made that no court has ever previously second-guessed the FDA's judgment about access to a drug, right? Do you think the FDA is infallible? Because, of course, only his pope, and not this pope, a good pope, like the Nazi pope, is infallible. And Jessica Ellsworth looked him in the eye and said, we don't think that question's really teed up in any way in this case, which is lawyer speak for you fucking asshole. And then once Sammy Bad Breath was done, Ketanji Brown Jackson owned his sorry ass. Also speaking to Jessica Ellsworth, Ketanji Brown Jackson said, so you were asked if the agency is infallible. And I guess I'm wondering about the flip side, which is, do you think that courts have specialized scientific knowledge with respect to pharmaceuticals? And as a company that has pharmaceuticals, do you have concerns about judges parsing medical and scientific studies? Well, let's just go to the audio. This is good. I don't know how this is going to work out. This is the Mifepristone case. Mifepristone. You know, the abortion pill. Which makes up something like 2/3 of all abortions nationwide now. And which, if these theocratic, most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties get their way, will go the way of Roe v. Wade. This clip starts with Sammy Bad Breath.
During the questioning of the Solicitor General, the statement was made that no court has ever previously second-guessed the FDA's judgment about access to a drug, right? And it's never second-guessed that.
That's correct.
You think the FDA is infallible?
No, Your Honor, we don't think that at all. And we don't think that question is really teed up in any way in this case.
Has the FDA ever approved a drug and then pulled it after experience showed that it had a lot of really serious adverse consequences?
It has certainly done that. And, Your Honor, I think that underscores why the adverse event reporting, the post-market surveillance that FDA does, the ability that these plaintiffs have, even if they don't have standing, certainly if they are seeing patients who are presenting with adverse events, if they are doing studies that show there is some unknown safety component that FDA should acknowledge, they can take significant steps to bring that to the agency's attention, to bring that to Dango's attention.
Justice Jackson, anything?
Yeah, I just
further?
Have one quick question. So you were asked if the agency is infallible, and I guess I'm wondering about the flip side, which is, do you think that courts have specialized scientific knowledge with respect to pharmaceuticals? And as a company that has pharmaceuticals, do you have concerns about judges parsing medical and scientific studies?
Yes, Your Honor. I think we have significant concerns about that. And there are two amicus briefs from the pharmaceutical industry that expand on why exactly that's so concerning for pharmaceutical companies who do depend on FDA's gold standard review process to approve their drugs and then to be able to sell their products in line with that considered judgment.
That was a very polite way for Ketanji Brown Jackson to set fire to Sammy Bad Breath Alito and burn him to the damn ground. Saying basically, he has no scientific knowledge. The only thing he has is his ideological hatred of women. So it remains to be seen how this will play out. the quacks who sought to ban mifepristone because there were quacks involved, make no mistake, they're quacks, wouldn't trust these fuckers to put on a Band-Aid without killing somebody. They bark and grunt about how mifepristone isn't safe, but it's been legal and safely used for 20 years. And over on MSNBC, they brought on their legal expert, Dahlia Lithwick, to put it all in context.
And that if they had their druthers, we could see a future case in the not-so-distant future in which that law, which was, as I said, an anti-pornography, anti-obscenity law that's been defunct for 100 years, could be trotted out in the near future to do away with abortion,
the
not
Comstock
just pills
Act.
In the mail, but abortion nationwide for everyone. That's pretty chilling that that's even a conversation that's being had.
So, Dahlia, I just want to make sure I understand your expert analysis. It's not that the court softened its view on abortion. It's that they questioned the specifics of this case belonging before the court. It doesn't necessarily mean mifepristone is safe forever. It just means, or tell me if I have that right.
No, that's exactly right. And I think we heard smatterings of the justices, some of the conservative justices saying, hey, come back when you've got a state plaintiff and, as opposed to one of these kind of grumpy doctors, and we might entertain this. Come back when you've got it tethered to the Comstock Act and we might entertain it. Come back when, you know, things are a little more settled, when Donald Trump is elected and the Comstock Act becomes the law of the land, and we might entertain it. I didn't see this necessarily as a sort of closing of the gates on a mifepristone challenge. I saw it as the opening of a lot of really scary Overton windows for the future.
Yeah. Thank you for that. First of all, for...
In other words, the fuckers aren't going to go away. And as background to the Comstock Act, comes from 1873. And it forbids using the Postal Service to send abortion-related and obscene materials. And so some of our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties said today that they'd be open to considering a ban on abortion medication under the Comstock Act. Ralph's noting, I'm guessing Sammy Bad Breath is really pissed at Ketanji Brown Jackson. Well, I'm sure he is. First of all, she's a woman and she's on the Supreme Court. He's not even happy about having the handmaid on the court. He's offended by the very presence of women, this dirtbag, this fascist piece of filth. And so we wait. And we'll probably get this decision, whatever the last day of the term is. Darlene said, I couldn't bear to listen to the oral arguments today, but I don't know if I'd feel sorry for Alito's wife. I feel sorry for their daughter because she looks like a nice, sweet girl like Kavanaugh's daughters, who seem like sweet girls who have no idea what kind of father's raising them, but I digress. Isn't Alito's wife the billionaire in the family? I'm wondering if she has her hubby by the balls and rules his ass like the emasculated bitch that he is. I've met men who are vicious to women out in the world because they don't have any power over their wives at home. You know, everything reminds me of a story, Darlene. When I was a kid, my high school, a public high school, was ruled by a cabal of members of the United Church of Christ, not the United Church of Christ, the Church of Christ, which used to be known as the Campbellites. And they made a Southern Baptist like me look like an Episcopalian, for Christ's sakes. No dancing, no pianies in the church. no smoking, no drinking, except none of them actually practiced it. And my high school principal, who was an absolute tyrant to students who smoked cigarettes, I was one of them, and would gladly suspend us from school for 3 days if we were caught smoking out behind the air conditioning unit around the corner from the gymnasium. Himself would sit behind the closed door of his principal's office, lighting one Camel off of another, because his wife did not allow him to smoke when he was at home. It's the same kind of thing. Also, Darlene adds, the Solicitor General, Elizabeth Preligar, is an attractive woman who wouldn't look twice at an ugly-ass, emasculated, poor excuse for a man-child like Alito, and he knows it. I hope your miserable life doesn't hurt too little, Sammy. I couldn't have said it better myself. But it did seem like the court generally didn't, and it happens like this sometimes. They don't like the case that's being presented to them, but they will signal that they want a better case, maybe from better lawyers. Oh, and one last thing before we're out the door, and I hope we knock off the last of the $22 challenges and finish both Zed's challenge and Kat's challenge. Laura Logan, now she's a Laura, not a Laura, she's a Laura, like Laura Trump. She was once a respected reporter for CBS News, and then she became a not-quite-so-respected reporter for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and now she's diminished her own credibility to the... She's a conspiracy theorist now. A nut. And she showed up, we've had already at the beginning of the program, we've had Nancy Mensa saying that it's because the bridge in Baltimore collapsed because the border isn't closed. By the way, the Coast Guard has given up on finding the 6 people who are missing. They are now presumed dead. And, you know, of course, Alex Jones said World War III has begun. Not that he'll be on the front lines or anything. Now there's Laura Logan talking to the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts, who should be in the Gray Bar Motel, but ain't because of a batshit crazy ruling by a maggot Trump appointee. Well, for the end of the program, grab the hockey puck.
This is what you call death by a thousand cuts. It is an absolutely catastrophic attack on critical infrastructure, and you cannot see it because a cyber attack is unseen. Just like the attack on 2020 on the voting machine that you cannot see. There's not a direction that you can look in, Steve, where we have our leaders, people in power, have been systematically dismantling the defenses of the United States of America. And this attack is a wake-up call.
What makes me think that she has tea and crumpets with Joanne Rowling?
Open your eyes and realize what you are facing, because they cannot afford for this election to take place. They cannot afford for Donald Trump to come into power. And there is absolutely nothing they will do. There was nothing, they will stop at nothing to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, the same people who stole the 2020 election brought down the bridge with a 1,000-foot-long container ship full of Kias. Okay, Lara, look the other way. Yeah, you'll feel better real soon. Yeah, you love those Thorazine darts in the neck, don't you, Lara? Sometimes I feel like, you know, I hate to end on a downer note, but sometimes I feel like our country is just fucked. Because we have no way of combating to stupid. And there's nothing but stupid inside the MAGA party. And everybody apparently has every maggot has an opinion about what caused this disaster, this tragedy. Every maggot, and none of them have anything to do with it just happening. Ships sometimes lose power. This is not a black swan event. This is not a cyber attack, but, well, State Representative Phil Lyman of Blanding, Utah, who is primarying Spencer Cox, the Republican governor of Utah, went on X and posted an excrement. Dear God. Well, Phil Lyman said that he knew the real cause of the Baltimore Bridge collapse. It was DEI. Yeah. Sure were. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Because, see, it turns out that the commissioner of the Port of Baltimore is a woman who is black named Corinthia A. Barber. And he said, and she knows nothing about ports. This is what happens when you have governors who prioritize diversity over the well-being and security of citizens. The only thing is, had that been a maggot governor, there would probably be a lot more dead people because there would have been people on the bridge. More people on the bridge. More cars on the bridge. But as Governor Moore of Maryland said, the heroes are the people who acted so swiftly to keep people from driving onto it. Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill said, while some argue about the presence of racism in America, others running for office can't help but confirm it when they open their mouth. No real connection, but delusions of a feeble mind who should not be in charge of a remote control, let alone a state. Well done, sir. Utah proud. Okay, now we're going to quit. Because, among other things, I have made up for being late, and that's important. And thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to our challenge makers. Kat, I can't thank you enough. Thank you so much, Zed. Thank you, Ralphs. 22 more bucks, and Zed's challenge is fulfilled, and Kat's is fulfilled. And we can start tomorrow on the other remaining $700 to finish the month of March. Fingers crossed. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like and subscribe, please. Leave a comment for the algorithms. Brother Deacon Asa, earlier when we were talking about Minnesota State Senator State Senator Limmer, domestic farm animals. Nah, that's all thinly veiled language that explains what the God-fearing, Bible-believing farmers have to do to get the sheep to let go when the sheep done locked up on them mid-stroke. Oh, Brother Deacon. Good goat will do that. That's a punchline. Not going to tell the rest of it. Brother Deacon. Brother Deacon. There's a murder hornet waiting for you. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, WhiteRoseSociety.org goes dark on June 1st. If there's anything, and there's a whole bunch of content there, if there's anything from the past that you would like to download, do it now. Ben has done so much. He has literally served out. What Ben has done at the White Rose Society is like, it's like the McDonald's sign. Billions and billions served. He has literally served out billions of hours of progressive radio content for free. For a long time, he was the home of Mike Malloy, the home of Tom Hartman, the home of me, Dr. Bill, Rick Smith, and so many others. Mark Thompson. And it's just unsustainable anymore. So it'll be dark as of June 1. So there's plenty of time to download whatever you want from there. And it might be, and Ben won't send a bill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice. 25 plus years in Appalachia, in a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your booster. Keep an eye out for when the next one becomes available. Flu shots. It's plenty cold here today. Flu's still moving. Wear your mask if you're around the maggots. Because, they tend to spread disease, even if it kills them. And it has. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance as best you can. And if Senator Limmer comes towards you saying, you don't know how, you don't know how mean those cows can be. Sometimes you just got to stand there waiting for them to come through the door, yelling, move over. And you got to mow them down with your AR-15, and you can't do it if you got it locked away in a gun safe. Well, avoid Senator Limmer like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, Wayne, it's all for you. Later.